This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. The HBO series The Wire has received critical acclaim for its accurate and gritty portrayal of crime and law enforcement in the city of Baltimore. University of Cincinnati English and History professor Dr. Stanley Corkin's recently published book is called Connecting the Wire: Race, Space, and Post-Industrial Baltimore. It's the first comprehensive season-by-season analysis of the entire series. And Dr. Corkin joins us to discuss The Wire and the series' depiction of urban life and crime in America. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Stan, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you very much for having me, Mark.
Yeah, why did you decide to write a book about The Wire? What got you going on this in the first place?
Well, I always write about film and history, so I'm really interested in the way that popular media represents a historical moment. And I had just finished a book about New York in the 1970s, and that book was really about the way in which economic change is portrayed and the way in which that portrayal moves economic change. That was about neoliberalism and the specifics of New York in the 1970s. And there were a lot of very interesting movies during that period of Hollywood production. So I finished that book and I was looking for a new project, as I always am. And my daughter brought to my attention this series. I didn't have HBO. And actually, the way I watched it was I got the discs from the public library and had to arrange them so that I would watch them in sequence, which was quite a task. And as I began watching the show, I thought, oh, this is really interesting. And I could see how it easily piggybacked on my earlier project about space and economics and urban life. And I began to think that, well, this would be a logical kind of seg from the earlier book. And I began thinking about it as a book project. Of course, after I had watched it all the way through more than once. So I began writing it.
So you watched all five series or all five seasons of this then?
I watched all five seasons initially. I really got hooked, even though the fifth season is dramatically less compelling than the other four seasons, though very interesting. And, you know, maybe we'll get a chance to talk about that, but very interesting thematically. It raises very important issues, but it's just not as well done. You can see the burnout occurring for The Wire writers and the staff. So you know, I did get through the five seasons, and you know, I was kind of chewing on this as a possible book project. And then the more I thought about it, the more I thought, yeah, I should definitely do this. And I began writing the book and thought it would go, you know, easily, since it did refer to an earlier project. And many years later, here it is. It took much longer than I thought, but it was very enjoyable to do, and it really extended my inquiries into urban life and, you know, representational texts and so on.
So you went from never having seen the series before to being a binge watcher. Is that what happened?
Yeah, isn't that how it always happens? You start watching something and you say, oh, I have to find out what happens next. And you get propelled along. I just finished doing this with Homeland. I could stay up till 5 o'clock every morning watching show after show.
Well, what in your mind makes the Wire so authentic?
Right. It really drew me in. I mean, it was a world that I had encountered in depths with which I had not quite encountered it. So, you know, this is I've been in Cincinnati 30 years. I've done lots of things here. I did an organization for public school issues in the 90s with Tom Mooney, the deceased head of the Cincinnati Federation of Teachers. I coached baseball, mostly with inner city kids, including my own son, for a number of years. I really got to see a lot of the city and live in the city. And, you know, I saw things that resonated with me that were quite similar to things I had encountered in Cincinnati. And I thought, wow, this is interesting. This is an interesting way of looking at it. And I hadn't quite thought about this. And this, you know, this show represents a world that you know, that seems authentic and that is taking me to places in that world that I haven't been.
So each season deals with a different issue. You were talking about season five earlier.
Right.
And how it touches on something that's not quite as compelling but still pertinent.
Well,
still
the topic is really compelling. The treatment isn't so
compelling.
Yeah, and
this is the season where Dave Simon was the creator, correct?
Right, that's right.
This is where he's lamenting the fact that the local newspaper is going by the wayside.
Right. Yeah. It's the most autobiographical season. But by then,
he was originally a reporter, wasn't he?
Yeah, he worked for the Baltimore Sun. He took a buyout, I think, in the late 80s or early 90s. And, you know, it was after the buyout that he became kind of an entrepreneurial writer and worked his way into mass media, you know, through various devices. So, yeah, this is really, to some degree, it's about the moment where he, you know, becomes disillusioned with his work at the Sun and takes a buyout. He was actually a union rep.
Do you think that he's kind of pessimistic about the demise of the newspaper industry? Do you think he's got a point there, or do you think he's being too pessimistic? Maybe
no. I think he's absolutely correct. I think that the Urban Daily, as we see around us, is a really endangered species. And the questions he asks are really interesting too. What becomes to the public sphere when there is no more Urban Daily? What becomes to in-depth reporting when there is no more Urban Daily? Are politicians accountable when there is no Urban Daily? So these are really important questions that he asks. And, the drama that he arranges around it, poses really interesting takes on those questions. At the center of that season is the fact that our primary character, Jimmy McNulty, arranges a fake serial killer. And that serial killer is a device for shaking money out of the city and the state so that he can distribute it for legitimate police investigations, which won't be funded otherwise. There are no cars. There's no – they're not getting paid. They're getting paid in script. So, at the center of it is this idea of fake news. And the fake news, of course, is much more compelling than the regular news because it's so sensational.
What do you think of Jimmy McNulty as the main character?
He's very interesting and quite flawed. And he's a great device for entering this world because he's an outsider to the world he enters, right? So the police are kind of, to some degree, defined as an occupying force in, the inner city neighborhoods. He's sympathetic. He's empathetic. He's also an alcoholic. He's quite compulsive. At one point in the series, he removes himself from murder investigations because it's taking over his life. So he's one of the hooks that keeps you going with the series.
Do you think anybody other than David Simon could have put this series together?
That's a good question. Maybe there's somebody out there, but certainly there's a kind of alignment of stars around this that he, his earlier work, he's not quite ready to give up his journalism. And therefore, he doesn't really evolve his narratives as fully as he might. So he, the earlier work is more ethnographic, more fact-based. Here he really, embraces the fictional possibilities of his topic. So that Simon has the knowledge to do this and the perspective to do this at this point. I think this is his best work. He the other things he's done are not quite as dense, intriguing, or revealing.
Why do you think he picked Baltimore? A lot of police dramas, they'll pick a city like Los Angeles or San Francisco or Chicago or New York. Why do you think he picked Baltimore in particular?
So I talk about this in my book. He picked Baltimore. Probably this made the show hardest. It was the hardest thing about the show to sell, because it was Baltimore, and Baltimore is a secondary, or I would say secondary, maybe a tertiary city in the U.S. So he chose Baltimore because it's what he knows, right? It's what he knew. It's what he knows. It's where he – around where he grew up. He grew up in the D.C. area. He went to University of Maryland, and he worked for the Sun. So because he worked for the Sun, he knew Baltimore intimately. So this was kind of the canvas that he developed his picture on. But also, Baltimore was a great – object for the show because it, unlike a city, I talk about this in the book, unlike a city like San Francisco or New York or Los Angeles, it really is not that kind of international dynamo that these world cities have become, since 1975, say. And Baltimore is a city that's, that then was in the process of gentrification, but it wasn't really fully gentrified. And in the process of defining its economic arc, but really had not quite defined it. So it was a city left behind by the shifting macroeconomic system after the collapse of industrialization in the 70s.
So I take it one of the reasons you became such a fan is you can see all these different messages coming out of this one show.
Yes, it's true that any great realist drama shows you a world in all its nooks and crannies, and it may not be exactly the world or you may not believe every nook and cranny, but it's certainly worth thinking about.
Is there a relationship between the old film noir crime dramas of the 1940s and the Wire?
Absolutely. I mean, this is not stylized in quite the same way. But, especially in the first season, he really borrows a lot from, the kind of template of crime dramas. And some of the shots, suggest that. Actually, the first shot in the first season is very much a quote from the movie Taxi Driver, which is a really famous neo-noir. So, yeah, he does pull from the genre of crime movies and develops it. And one of the things that I learned in watching the show is that the TV format is really great for this. It's, I had only written about films before this, but actually the TV format may work even better because, we get 60 hours.
Did you talk with law enforcement or political leaders in Baltimore about their thoughts about the series?
No. Actually, Harry Black lives in my building and he's worked in Baltimore, but by the time he moved here, I was already done with the book. So I had been in Baltimore. I had spent some time there, especially at the moment of its decline. I'm originally from Boston. One of my close friends from Boston was an art student at Maryland Institute of Art, and she lived in a beautiful building right by the big park in town with the zoo. And it was, the building was fine. Actually, John Waters, the movie director, lived there. I once went out with a friend of mine to look for something for a grocery store, and there were no grocery stores. There were only, plasma banks and places to buy liquor through plexiglass, and it was completely disrupted. And, that was kind of my image of Baltimore, and, Simon kind of delivered on that. And actually, a lot of this is kind of shot around that area.
Now, what do you think, as far as influences on the series, The Wire, what do you think about earlier police shows like Hill Street Blues, NYPD Blue? How much did they shape what you see in The Wire?
A lot. I think that, Stephen Bochco is really the innovator in this, right? And he's the showrunner for Hill Street Blues and L.A. Law and NYPD Blue. And what he tried to do is shake up the conventions of police drama through various devices. And one of the things he did is he tried to create these connecting threads among episodes so that each episode was not entirely self-contained. And it's something he was criticized for quite a bit as he didn't achieve the ratings that the networks expected him to achieve. So Simon uses a lot of the devices, this camera action and narrative structure that Bochco uses, but he has a lot more freedom because he's working for HBO and they gave him really kind of carte blanche in that, he could really extend his remaking of crime genre.
So we've got, demise of the print media. We've got union issues, labor union issues.
Season 2.
What are some of the other issues he touches on?
So in season 3, I mean, there's always, one of the things I learned in writing this book is that the thing that you think of as being at the center of a season is at the center, but there's so much around it that, there's all this context that, changes the way you look at that thing in the center. So season 3 is based on a statement that Baltimore Mayor Kurt Schmoke made at a conference, and he said, maybe be just better if we legalize drugs. And this, became something that people took up in the 80s, especially libertarians and conservatives. So both liberals and conservatives. William F. Buckley wrote about it somewhat. And so Simon interviewed Schmoke, and he thought, well, This would be an interesting thought experiment. So we'll try to, you know, play out dramatically what happens if you legalize drugs in a specific sector in a specific part of the city. And that's, you know, that's...
And he built a whole season around this.
He built a whole... Well, there's, you know, of course, a lot more going on. There are all these issues of gentrification and real estate value and so on. But, right, the center of that season, the place that they... where drugs are legalized is probably about a, you know, two-block square unit is completely abandoned except for one old lady, which is an interesting plot wrinkle. And they call it the police commander – no, one of the sergeants actually refers to it when he's trying to get the drug users into the sector and the drug dealers into the sector. He refers to it as Amsterdam, which is, of course, where – soft drugs are putatively legal, somewhat legal. And one of the kids who he's talking to calls it, says, Hamsterdam, and asks what that is. And it's referred to subsequently as Hamsterdam all through the 13 episodes of the season. So Hamsterdam is the free drug zone. And it turns out to be, you know, it really asks a lot of questions about the drug war. And one of the recurring lines of the series is, it can't be a drug war because wars sometimes end. And that's, you know, kind of the statement of the futility of the war on drugs. But Hamsterdam is a disaster. It doesn't work.
You know, with the popularity of the series, I'm surprised it never won an Emmy.
Me too.
Why do you think it never went far with the awards folks?
I think that probably today it would win an Emmy. You know, it ran from 2001 to 2008. I think it must have been a different climate of voters.
Was it ahead of its time maybe?
Well, I think it was too dark, too gritty, too urban, maybe too racial, you know. So I think that it was not it wasn't really a matter of the show. I could see that a show with this kind of, you know, power and, you know, involve social commentary could easily win an Emmy today, but just it didn't then.
Yeah. We've got about 30 seconds left here. Stan, tell us who would enjoy reading your book. Who's this aimed at?
Well, I think that the obvious connection is people who have seen the show or are interested in the show. And maybe if you haven't seen the show and might be interested in the show, I think that the book is pretty accessible. What I tried to do is to connect the show to – you know, it's to the world, really, to reveal its connections to, you know, actuality as we live it. And I think that it's a very articulate vision of urban life, not the only possible vision, but still of a very articulate vision of an urban life. And I think that people who are interested in those urban topics and who are interested in, you know, the show itself would certainly find this an intriguing read.
Well, Stan, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very
much. University of Cincinnati English and History Professor Dr. Stanley Corkin. His recently published book is Connecting the Wire, Race, Space, and Post-Industrial Baltimore.